Welcome to Real Estate Hackers, where you'll hear how real estate investors grew something from nothing.
Property management is going to become more tech. Our entire business today is based off of a hack. What if you could put $1,000 into an apartment building project on your phone?
With YouTube, with podcasts, you can catch up very quickly to a seasoned investor.
Now here's your real estate hacker host, Chad Gallagher.
All right, what's up, guys? Jonas Bordeaux here, and boy, I'm excited. We have, as we talk through different real estate tech influencers across the world, I met Jonas at the IMN conference and very quickly thought to myself, this is someone who the real estate hackers world is going to want to hear from. And Jonas was nice enough to kind of carve out some time here. So thanks for doing this.
Yeah, it's absolutely a pleasure, Chad. Thanks for having me on.
Cool. So Jonas, you, and correct me if I'm wrong, you co-founded a company, Dwellzy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
That's right.
So Dwellzy is kind of a modern day take on a renter marketplace, allowing basically landlords to connect with renters. There's a few of these out there. Apartments.com, Zillow, I guess, sort of acts as one. Craigslist was probably the original mm-hmm. online marketplace. Yeah. Love to hear kind of your take on maybe how the heck you came up with this idea, and how it's kind of modernized the experience for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. The genesis of it came because I was running a portfolio for one of the big REITs, and I saw firsthand the collapse of the Craigslist marketplace. And Craigslist, I don't know if this is relevant for your audience, but Craigslist used to be the number one platform by far for renters and for getting your place rented. At Essex, even one of the S&P 500 company that I was at, we were getting as much as 50% of our lead volume from Craigslist at its peak. And when that crashed, and by the end of 2018, it was almost zero. That was a real hardship for our business. It was really
just real quick. So the height of Craigslist in my head is like 2008, 2006.
I'd call it, peak was 2008 for rental properties, 2008 to 2012, maybe somewhere in that range, probably plus or minus a couple of years on either end. Still 2016, it was still a pretty strong tool for us. And we're still getting a huge slug of leads from it and very good quality leads. And obviously it was free in our markets. I know there's a couple of markets where they've charged, but very labor intensive and, really an awful experience for everybody involved. You never know if your listing's getting ghosted. Why didn't Craigslist like this? Zero feedback, very frustrating to try to work with as a landlord. And as a renter, just hard to search through everything, everything just poorly organized, very tough to search and find what you're looking for. But everybody was there. All the landlords were there. All the renters were there. And that's what you need to make a successful marketplace. And so it worked pretty well. But when it stopped, when it went away, there was really no backup to it. There were some other existing ILSs out there, internet listing services out there, but they were all pay to play. If you were a landlord, you had to pay. And the net result of that is that most people didn't pay. And so you end up with these big brands that have 5-10, actually none of them got to 10%, but 5-7% of the US rental inventory. So if you're a renter looking for a place, you really couldn't find a material proportion of the listings online anywhere by the mid 2010s. And that was obviously a huge point of friction for renters and for landlords.
I actually don't know what led to the decline of Craigslist. Was it the UI just never improved? That's how I feel about it. Is that, am I simplifying it, or just is it really that simple? That just the UI?
Yeah. No, the UI never improved. And, certainly you could say what you want about Craigslist on the UI front. Some people love it. Lots of people hate it. But the UI never improved, but that wasn't what took them down. What took them down was what I'd describe as the professionalization of fraud. So fraudsters got really organized and really effective, and they just drowned out the legitimate traffic on both sides. Fraudulent landlords, not real landlords, but people who were posing as landlords in order to try to defraud renters became the overwhelming majority of available listings on the platform. And then on the renter side, fraudulent renters, people posing as renters in order to try to scam landlords, became a significant proportion, if not a majority, of all of the leads that were flowing through there. So it just became a waste of everybody's time as a result of that.
Right. Okay. So fraud takes over. And I think everyone's heard of the Craigslist fraudulent ad. Yeah. And then, so you kind of mentioned, so next was these big sites that were pay to play.
Yeah.
Apartments.com, would that be in the mix?
Yeah. There's kind of the three big players in the space, right? Apartments.com, which is owned by CoStar. They've got a whole bunch of other properties that they've bought over the years. Zillow is another one of the big ones. The last is the old RentPath platform, which is now owned by Redfin. You know, those are kind of the three big conglomerates in the space that have accumulated a lot of ILS brands. I've been a client of theirs. They're great to work with. They can provide great service to folks who are willing to pay, but most landlords are not willing to pay for those services.
Right. Okay. So you guys come in as I guess really quick before you even jump to that, the other two that come to mind, like Facebook Marketplace, while we're kind of talking about it, like seems like it never has really caught on, although I mean, I know there's a lot of scale there and people talk about using it to rent stuff, but I haven't seen it like being used for anyone who's trying to like really systematize stuff. And I know Zumper has an agreement with them. Maybe just talk me through a little bit of that before we get to your own solution. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Facebook Marketplace is a little confusing. You know, it's kind of inherited some of the Craigslist, you know, good and bad. There's a huge amount of fraud flowing through Craigslist, flowing through Facebook Marketplace. The fraudsters have migrated there in huge numbers. I talk to renters all the time who've been scammed via Facebook Marketplace. So that's a real issue with that platform. They haven't made it easy to list. And I think one of the core challenges is we're not selling shoes here. We're not selling a really fungible product that is just like a lot of other products. Each apartment, each home is a unique asset and it needs to be marketed in a different way. And you really need to have a bespoke platform. And I think, you know, as good as the Facebook folks are at so many different things, they're not trying to build a unique tool for rentals. They're trying to sell shoes and sell pizzas and sell used furniture and sell everything else. And they're just not going to be able to serve this category well with that approach. And so it's been, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there, but it really has never matured in a way that's been really genuinely useful to, you know, folks like the Real Estate Hackers.
Cool. So, you know, Dwellzy, talk us through what's been successful with the platform of, you know, at its core, I know the site talks about having 13 million homes. It's a connection platform, I guess, for tenants and landlords. Are you aggregating and people are posting into it, or maybe talk about kind of what's been really successful for you guys?
You know, we've been building for a little over 4 years now. With any marketplace, you got to have supply and you got to have demand. We are now actually over 14 million units on the platform, so we've been wildly successful in getting supply onto the platform. You know, just great folks out there who are really excited about what we're doing. We're now north of 30% of the U.S. rental inventory on the platform. So orders of magnitude more than ever been a part of this. And, you know, obviously it's completely free and we've made it really easy for people to work with us. So that combination of things is really valuable. Plus the leads are the highest quality in the business. We're consistently told that by our partners. So that's fantastic. And, you know, for the past year or two now, we've been working on the demand side and we're now serving, you know, we served about 2 million renters last year. We'll continue to grow pretty rapidly on that front and serve more people as the marketplace expands. But at this point, I'm really pleased with the quality of service that we're able to offer.
That's great. Are you doing anything to help prevent fraud? I know you mentioned that kind of on the upfront side.
Yeah, no, it's front and center to the whole business, right? Like fundamentally, you can't take that mantle from Craigslist of, you know, being the free listing platform and not deal with the issues that they faced, right? So we knew fraud would be a huge issue from the beginning. And so we've structured the business from top to bottom in order to combat fraud. And we've also aligned incentives. We're the only platform in the rental space that actually offers a warranty to renters that if they get defrauded using Dwellzy and they're paying Dwellzy customer, we'll compensate them up to $2,000 if they get defrauded on Dwellzy. We haven't had any losses yet, so we're pretty good at keeping fraud off the platform.
That's amazing. So you said if they're paying, so what, a tenant can sign up for kind of like a paid account that kind of says, if I'm defrauded, we'll protect you?
We have a product called Dwellzy Edge, which offers a variety of benefits to renters. And one of those is that warranty. They've got it's $30 product. It's not expensive. But it does give a number of big advantages in the rental search, including that, as well as getting a text message notification of a new listing that matches your search. What a lot of renters don't know is that we're not applying for college applications here. We're not, you know, going through a process where all the applications come in and the landlord then sorts through them and cherry picks the ones that look most appealing. It's not the way it works at all. Fair housing is quite limiting in this way. In order to be fair housing compliant, the best, easiest way to do that is just take every application, every inquiry in the order in which they're received and work your way through them as the landlord. Mm-hmm. So you really need to be first. And that text message allows the renter to be first when a new listing comes up. So there's a bunch of other benefits, free dog walk, ad-free experience on the site, all those sorts of things. But that's the Dwellzy Edge product.
That's clever. And then I see like a call out to a verified or unverified listing. Maybe just help me explain that, understand a little bit. I guess like also how you keep fraud down is by doing some kind of verification. That's a real listing.
Yeah, so we have a number of different verification checks on the back using a combination of algorithms and machine learning, as well as some human interaction when necessary to make a call. But we effectively have three categories that listings get sorted into. One is that it's verified, which means we're 100% certain this is a legitimate listing. Unverified on our site means we are 99.9% certain, and we're still standing behind our warranty on those ones. But we are not 100% certain. So there is some risk, and we have some added protocols just to make sure that renters are being thoughtful as they're contacting those folks, because rental fraud is still a scourge. Over 20% of renters last year were getting defrauded in the search. So that's brutal, and we want to make sure we protect folks from that. And then the third category is listings that don't make it onto our site at all. And there are a lot of listings that come through where people are attempting to defraud, or even there's a risk of it looking like a fraudulent listing. So we just don't feature those in the site at all.
That's cool. Obviously, not all of these listings are people who are uploading their property directly to just your site. Correct. I have to imagine that there's some pretty important agreements that you're making with the Appfolios and Buildiums of the world. And I think about that, right, that these guys, you know, when they post a new listing, you want to make sure that your listing gets directly up into your site through Appfolio, Buildium, Rent Manager, all these different big property manager accounting platforms.
Yep. No, absolutely. That's been one of the cores to our approach, is to work with the big property management software companies. We're really fortunate to have great relationships with, you know, the brands you mentioned and others as well, where, you know, listings will automatically appear on our site. Again, nobody has to pay for anything at Dwellzy. There's no paid relationship between any of the 20,000 plus professional property management organizations listing with us, or the hundreds of thousands of individual owners and operators who list with us. But right now they're all coming through those relationships, where people are sending it directly out of their property management software, or, you know, some sort of platform that is used for syndication rather than a property management software system. So,
cool. And then I imagine the business model here. So you talked about the $30. So there's a product on the tenant side to kind of be a premium tenant. If I think about this right, there's probably a premium side on the landlord side too, to be featured last or featured first or featured more or something.
No, actually, that's actually, you know, we don't have any paid listing options on the site. We'll probably do like a sponsored listing at some point. But one of the things that's core to the renter experience is we're the only platform that offers organic search results. So we only show you what you're looking for and nothing else. And that is a big advantage for the renter. It saves them a ton of time. It also really improves lead quality, because lead quality goes down pretty fast when you're buying first page placement. And you just end up with a bunch of people who think the place looks nice, but aren't really that interested. So right. By avoiding that, we save our landlord partners a lot of time and resources.
Right. I mean, not too different from the Google mentality. I mean, I think about that, right, where, you know, you knew if you went to Google, the search results were not a pay-for-play model. Exactly. At some point, there became a blue link or a different color link at the top that, you know, made some money for Google, but the organic results are the organic results, and you try to match people as closely as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that renter product is a core part of the business model, as well as having advertising on the site. That turns out to be really valuable. I didn't see that one coming, honestly. I should have, but I didn't. And the last today is data. You know, we know more about properties in the rental space than anyone has ever known. And being able to share that information with folks who need that data to figure out how to set rents, to make decisions about property acquisitions, all of those sorts of things. That's another piece of the business model.
That's cool. Look, I'm sure you've seen some of the data that this thing spins off. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe give us an example of something that you've seen that's kind of surprised you. Or been interesting, or a soundbite that you say, "Oh, wow, I wouldn't have guessed this."
Well, it's interesting because we've never had, as a country, good rent data that is actually tracking. So, now with 30% of the U.S. rentals, we have a really good cross section across all asset classes and asset types within rentals. So we're able to see things like, for example, one bedroom apartment rents are actually down over the last 3 years. They're down by a little more than 1% wow. as people have shifted towards bigger places, single family homes, larger apartments, and the data just doesn't spot that, because the existing data providers who are doing their very best to provide good insights based on the data they have. But fundamentally, I always compare it to asking Mercedes-Benz about car prices. You know, Mercedes is going to have a great perspective on luxury automobile prices, but they're not going to know anything about the run-of-the-mill stuff. And the folks who are out there with data previous to Dwellzy, really had a strong perspective on the high-end multifamily world, but they didn't know anything about anything else because they didn't have that data. It's, mm-hmm. perfectly reasonable. But with us, we've got the full range, so we can really delve into that. In every market in the country, we cover over 800 MSAs, over 16,000 zip codes. So the data is really deep and broad, and fundamentally, it tells a story that hasn't been heard before.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're one for one on shocking data points here today. one bedroom apartments over the last 3 years are down 1%. That is highly surprising. I guess that's being driven by, am I thinking about this right? Being driven by high end apartments being down? I don't even know.
No, high end apartments have actually gone up in many cases. And there's certainly markets that get a lot of heat and light, like New York City, where that's not the case and rents are up materially. Mm-hmm. But if you look at one bedrooms on a nationwide basis, for every market where they're up, they're also down elsewhere. And, this is one of the things that the data hasn't captured. It's captured those premium apartment communities that have actually continued to get rent growth. Where we haven't seen the rent growth is the more legacy communities, the Bs, the Cs, the secondary and tertiary markets. And we've had a massive reshuffle in how people want to live in the past couple of years. More people are working from home, more people can choose to live in the place where they want to live and work in the job that they want to work in, wherever that job might be. And as a result of that, a lot of people are freed up and can pick different locations and they need more space. So, the one bedroom apartment is going to be one of the least appealing options for somebody like that right now. They need the space of a two bedroom or three bedroom, even if they're just living by themselves.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I've walked some units before with some builders who had talked about kind of this movement of a big open floor plan, and I think we definitely agree with that philosophically. Mm-hmm. But our side comment has always been find room for some really small bedrooms.
right.
Like, even if the bedroom is smaller than what you'd think it should be, the small bedroom is still better than a large bedroom, but only one bedroom. And I think that makes sense. There's a big push in America for two and three bedroom, four, even five. I mean, we see five bedroom houses are the fastest thing to get rented anywhere. And I'm sure you probably see something similar.
Very much so. Yeah, the five and even six bedroom houses are in enormous demand. One of our team members lives in a six bedroom house and he has two kids. And the reality of it is you know, they wanted their kids to have their own bedroom, and he and his wife both need home offices. So, you know, you get to a 6-bedroom house making sense for a 4-person family very quickly. It's just the reality of, you know, how we're using space these days.
So you talked about kind of nailing the rent number. I always thought it's a little tricky because you see the rent amount go up. You don't actually know if it rents for that amount. How do you kind of think about using that to quantify? And my other comment here before you answer is, I know I mentioned this to you, Rent-O-Meter is something that we've used before. I think that's relatively new to you, but that seems like a comp maybe of where you're going. That was out maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But it seems like, I mean, Rent-O-Meter hasn't really grown a ton. But it does seem like there's a space in the world for someone who can accurately tell you what something should rent for. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, one of the core reasons I started Dwellzy was because I wanted that data. I was at this platform that had 60,000 apartments. I was trying to set the rents and trying to figure out where the rent should be. And you know, our property revenue management systems were consistently wrong. And, you know, the folks building them were trying to do the right things. There was nothing inherently wrong with the systems. It was just that they didn't have the data necessary to really have good predictive models about where the rent should be. And so, you know, nobody's ever really had it. The best data out there was old, was aggregated, so you couldn't get specific about your property and what the analogs were. And it might be as old as 3, 4, 5, 6 months old before you're seeing it for the first time. So it's just difficult to build any kind of modeling based on that. And so, you know, and the data sources that were available were scraping, which results in terrible data outcomes that are really hard to, you know, really make sure you've got the right stuff with any kind of consistency over time. And then survey data. And, you know, I can tell you, I built a contact center and we would get hundreds of calls from survey folks each week. And, you know, the job of our contact center was not to answer survey questions. It was, you know, get those off the phones and get back to talking to renters. And so we were not focused on giving them the most accurate information, not out of malice, but just out of, you know, efficient use of time. And so, you know, survey data is just, it's really challenging to make good use of that. So I wanted the real data, which I saw was in the marketing feeds. And it was, you know, something that really wasn't tapped into. I spent 2 years trying to buy it and couldn't find anybody who had a material inventory of that information. And so now that we have it, it's really exciting because we can build all kinds of tools and partner with all kinds of folks to help their rent prediction tools get dramatically better than they have been without good quality data.
So do you like when a unit comes on the marketplace for rent at a certain price point, I guess that alone probably doesn't tell you everything. How else are you thinking about this to kind of build out that? Obviously, part of it is having access to a huge volume of what things are renting or being listed for.
Yeah.
But I would think that there's some more intelligence there that helps you kind of hone in on what the right rent price is.
Yeah. So you've got to understand, you know, you've got to have the rent and the flow of the rent for properties being offered. You also have to see how those offering prices are getting updated. Somebody was offering a 2-bedroom apartment for $2,100 and they weren't getting any traction with it. So they moved it down to $1,900. You know, we can see that evolution in the listings and therefore in the data as that evolves. And in my experience in the space, the overwhelming majority of leases are signed at the final asking price. You know, the data that I've seen in the samples that I've participated in are, you know, 90%+. And when it's not that final asking price, it's usually idiosyncratic to the renter, not the property. It's because the renter has, you know, 3 St. Bernards and the landlord's looking at that being like, uh-oh, you know, place is going to get trashed if I, you know, don't handle that properly. So they end up charging a little more rent or something else. Or somebody wants a 2-year lease and the landlord's like, well, that sounds great. I'll give them a, you know, a little bit of a break on the rent in order to try to lock that in and reduce the vacancy risk. You know, so what we see is a variation from that asking rent is not a market decision about the unit. It's a landlord decision about the renter and the risk and the, you know, reward opportunity with that given renter in that situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess the only thing I've always thought about is like when rents are going up quickly, which they're not right now, but they were a year or two ago. if everyone in the community is too low,
right,
how do you know you're too low?
Yeah, that's a huge challenge. I was talking to people who, you know, somebody had been living in one of their houses for a couple of years. And, you know, we saw north of 20% rent growth from the beginning of 2021 through to now for single family rentals. I can't remember the exact number offhand, but it's like 26, 28%. And in that kind of market, when you're seeing that rent growth, you know, it's hard for landlords to imagine rent growth beyond 10%, but sometimes it's there. And how do you know that, okay, this renter just moved out? It feels like we're out of the market. And, you know, talking to some of the SFR owners and operators, you know, they would have this experience of increasing the rent by 10% and having it just rent immediately with no hesitation. First renter walks in and takes the place. They're like, oh, you know, so they try 20% in the next place. The same thing happens. And, you know, where's the, you know, feasibility threshold there? And how do you figure that out? It's really hard. But again, that's why you need such timely, accurate data and be able to dig into the data and look at it and say, okay, this just rented last week at this price. This was the final offering price. Here's five other properties just like that within a 1 mile radius of our, of the property that we're offering. And, right, and this is literally this week's data. We're not looking at 6 months ago. You're not looking at 12 months ago. You're looking at this week. And that's the power of having a really deep, broad, specific, and current data set.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I've always thought, and I don't know if you guys are there or not yet, but like I've always thought there's some velocity to this that, and maybe you'll be able to get there over time, but if you see a listing go up and all of a sudden you get 10 inquiries in a day, that's actually an indication that we probably don't have the right rent price.
Yes.
And it's almost like it's the same red flag that goes up if something's been on the market for 90 days and, you know, we only have five inquiries that have come in. So kind of using this, like this concept of velocity, I would think over time would also start to fuel some of your kind of data.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I, you know, what I learned in my own landlording experience is, you know, somebody would move out of one of my apartments. I'd handle renewals in a different way, but somebody moves out of one of the apartments and I would basically put it out there, you know, as early as I could, you know, even, you know, 6 or 8 weeks before vacancy, if possible, and list it at the highest price that I could imagine I could possibly get and see if there's any traction. And then, you know, just move it down until the leads start flowing. Because the reality of it is, you know, all of us landlords have relatively small fields of view in comparison to the renter. The renter, you know, somebody's looking for a 3-bedroom house in a particular area, they've probably seen every single option available there for a couple of months. And they know exactly where the price should be and what's reasonable. They may be grumpy. They may, you know, feel like it should be lower, but they know what the market price is much better than a landlord who has an availability and is like, oh, I got to figure out a price in an hour or two. They do a little searching around and try to figure out the best price, but they're not going to have nearly as much information and intel as the renter does. Mm-hmm. So that use that renter skill and that renter knowledge as an asset to you. You know, start at that high price and then ratchet it down until you find where the market is.
My next question was going to be exactly that. So let's say someone owns a couple single family homes, not a huge portfolio, right? They're not an institutional investor. There's a lot of people who listen to this that fall into that gap. And so, I mean, it sounds like your advice is, you know, on the housing side of things, there's a lot of wisdom that says, you know, actually, especially right now, like listing something, maybe even a little bit on the low side, that would be okay and actually create this demand and then allow the kind of market to bid up. But it's interesting, right? That I guess you'd agree with this, is that rental listings don't work that way. Tenants don't come and start bidding up the price. And so if you don't start high and then start lowering it down every couple of days, you're missing out on opportunity on the high end of things.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of folks in the industry, you know, we all know what we know. And a lot of people have had exposure to the for sale market and they think maybe it'll work the same way. And I'm not going to say it hasn't. There are certain situations where the rental market has gotten so intensely competitive and so favorable to the landlord. And we saw this at many points over the past couple of years in submarkets and for specific types of assets, where people, renters do feel like they need to bid. in order to be competitive, and they need to be willing to pay more than the asking price on the rental. But that's incredibly rare. And most of us, I've never had a rental property that's experienced that. And I've, you know, managed more than 60,000 properties in my day. So it certainly happens out there, but it's rare.
That's interesting. And I guess what the tenant's not like on the buy side, when you see a property dropping in price every week, that's a signal like of desperation, sort of, at least for me as a buyer. And I will then go in and I'm going to start bidding low and see where I can negotiate. I guess the tenant doesn't really think that way, right? They see it. They see a rent price. They're in the market for a week. They want to find a place to live. They scour a bunch of listings. Whether something has been lowered in price a week ago, they don't even know.
It's invisible to them. They're very rarely going to see a listing twice. And when they do, they might notice that the prices come into their range and it might trigger action on their part for a rental that they liked, but didn't feel like they could afford before. And now with the new price point, they might move, or before they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Cool. This is kind of a tricky one, but look, you see a lot of data. Well, I guess you are an investor. I didn't even ask you this, but you invest in real estate, or you did, or?
Yeah, no, I have in the past, not right now. I'm all in on Dwellzy right now.
So. Okay. But if you were to put on your investor hat right now and see the data that you're seeing from Dwellzy, which I agree, super valuable. You don't have to convince me of that. Maybe something that has piqued your interest, that if you were out there going to buy a property tomorrow, maybe it would lean you to targeting a certain city, a certain number of bedrooms, a certain number of bathrooms, a certain property type, because you're just saying, wow, man, these are just, the data we're seeing really shows there's an imbalance in supply and demand, maybe.
Yeah.
Something that is a weird question, but I thought you might have something that you've seen that you're just like, man, we're always blown away by 3-bedroom, 3-bath houses. You know, they just fly off the marketplace in days.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, you know, 3-bedroom, 3-bath, because we have seen massively disproportionate demand for SFR properties. There's just way more interest in those properties in general in the marketplace than there is in multifamily. And I think that, you know, that's a big factor. And then I think, you know, there are certain markets that have been really favored and I think will continue to be favored, which is, I'd call these markets that have a lot of draw to them, you know, secondary, tertiary markets that have big universities, that have state capitals, that have things that make them great places to live and often low cost associated with living there. So somebody who's been living in New York or LA or San Francisco doesn't want to live there anymore. They might move back to the place where they went to college or where they grew up because it's a great place to live at a dramatically lower cost base. And the other local property type, I'd say, or local regional type is what I call resort-like towns, you know, towns that have features of a place you might go on a vacation. And, you know, it might be actually fairly inexpensive to live there. Whether or not it is to visit there is a different story. But a lot of people look at that and say, I love visiting this town. Wouldn't it be great to live there? And now they can. So we're really seeing a secular shift to places like that and away from some of the more traditional locations that people have been, working hard to live in the past.
Yeah, that's interesting. One of the kind of real estate hackers, or maybe it's my big push right now, is these like what I call boring B-class houses.
Yes.
That aren't very sexy, and you're not going to, you know, have 100% return. What you do get, I find, is very low variance.
Yes.
From an investing perspective.
Yeah.
And that's one. And then two, there does, to me, feel like there's an imbalance in supply and demand on the renting side, because it's expensive to build these things right now.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot of these being built. It sounds like you're somewhat in agreement on that philosophy of those being great.
Yeah, and it really is all about the investor and what they're looking for, right? If it's really important to you to have a shot at that 100% capital appreciation, that's great. But as a friend of mine who's deep in the Minneapolis market always said, you know, what's wrong with a 12% yield? Like, nothing wrong with a 12% yield. Yeah, I'm not going to get the capital appreciation in this market, but I'm getting a 12% yield on my investment. And that's a really good day. You know, so folks who might be investing in coastal markets and are seeing a, you know, 4 or 5% current yield have a shot at that appreciation, perhaps. But you might not, you know, but it might cost you a lot of money along the way there. Whereas, you know, some of those secondary markets can be fantastic for those types of properties that you're describing.
I have one more question. I'll be quick on this one, but I'm just dying to know, as someone who posts a lot of properties, is there any advice you have for someone when they're posting? Have you learned anything like, I don't know, make sure you show the door in the picture or include over 20 pictures and these things run faster? I don't know, something weird that's like makes for a better listing.
So it's a great question. And a lot of the listings out there are terrible. So, you know, making them better is one of the things that we would really love to see. I think a couple of things that people may or may not have thought of. Number one, more information allows renters to triage themselves out and to realize that they shouldn't be wasting your time or theirs on your place. Yeah. And there's this really surprising negative feedback cycle that, you know, some of the properties that get the most inquiries that we see on the platform are, you know, three grainy photos and minimal information about the property, price and location, and not much else. And we see a huge number of inquiries going to those properties. And the reason for that is that people have questions that the landlord didn't answer in the listing. And so it's just wasting everyone's time.
Jonas, this is awesome, man. We covered a lot of stuff. I normally cut these things off about a half hour because I start getting bored. I know the audience does too. I'm still going strong here. So this has been really great. I'm a data junkie. You could probably tell by all my questions and my real life thinking of these different things. You had some really cool insights. Thanks a ton for joining us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much, Chad. It was a pleasure to be on.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Real Estate Hackers Show. If you've not yet become a member of Real Estate Hackers, you can do that for free at realestatehackers.com. Get access to all the amazing real estate hacker deals from incredible vendors, a ton of content and materials for you, the investor. You can follow Real Estate Hackers on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. If you can give us a 5-star review for the podcast, I would personally really appreciate it. We read every review, and thank you so much for helping us grow this community for you, the real estate investor.